Dear listener, I have a very, very special guest for you today. I know you're going to get so much out of today's episode. The very empowering Alana Kirk is on the show today. I'm so excited. Alana is a best-selling author, certified life and leadership coach, and motivational speaker who works with women in midlife. Alana is the author of not one, but two books, The Sandwich Years and Midlife Redefined, Better, Bolder, Brighter. Alana, I am so excited to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, and I am delighted to be here. I'm slightly sore because I did your video a couple of days ago, but I feel great for it.
That's great. I'm delighted. So I want to ask you, first of all, about your story. It's so interesting. Would you share with our listeners some of your story and how you got to where you are now and how you got into coaching?
Sure, because my eldest daughter is 18, and she's creating that checklist of success from which she will hang her life. She can't seem to get behind past 35, but I keep telling her there is a whole life after 35. But yeah, so when I was creating my checklist back in the 80s, there was no such thing as a midlife coach, and even if there was, I'm not sure I'd have ticked that box. But like many women, life takes us in lots of different avenues and paths, and I know your own story. This was probably 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you wouldn't have imagined yourself doing this. So I spent many years in the nonprofit sector working for UNICEF and traveling. And then, life took a turn and I got married, started a family, so far trying to check the normal boxes. And it wasn't quite as straightforward as I wanted. In 5 years, I had seven pregnancies, three children at the end of that. And that's not uncommon nowadays. We don't talk about it that much, but there was a sort of huge energy for a few years of forming the family and all of the form that took in terms of having babies, losing babies, raising babies. And then just 3 or 4 days after my third baby was born, my mum was at the birth actually, and then she was looking after my other two daughters. And just as she rang me to say, she couldn't wait for me to come home the next day. And unfortunately, she had a catastrophic stroke that night and would spend the next 5 years completely bedbound, paralyzed, brain damaged, unable to say my name. And so I was sort of catapulted into the next 5 years of what I call the sandwich years, where sandwiched between care of my mum and my dad looking after my mum and my small children. And again, not unusual. Women are usually giving birth a bit later, our parents are living longer, and a lot of women are in that multiple care role in midlife. In the midst of all of that, my marriage ended. And so a couple of weeks just before my 45th birthday, I remember my marriage just ended and my mum was in the final year of her life. And, it had just been chaos for 10 years. And I remember looking in the mirror and just thinking to myself, it wasn't even that my mum was in this state or my marriage was over, but that I barely recognized myself because I'd had my head barreled down in survival mode. Again, not uncommon. And, in the process of picking myself back up, I went back to college, studied psychology, and work now with women in midlife because we live in this amazing, unique midlife. We've got an extra 2, 3 decades of life to be lived in the middle. And thanks to the work that you do, if we do that, if we look after ourselves well, we get to live those extra decades in midlife, not old age. But there's a huge amount of pressure and responsibility. And in that sort of decades-long stage, we can be going through multiple changes, both in terms of our care roles, trying to juggle career with family. We're also going through everything from fertility, childbirth, raising kids, menopause, perimenopause. Our physiology is changing. It's a hugely difficult and wonderful period of time. And I guess I sit in the space of trying to help women tip the scales, not only to take advantage of this time, because we get to redefine so many aspects of life, marriages, post-marriage relationships, careers, our health, possibility after raising a family. It used to be you were sort of fecked into the corner to knit and desexualized and devalued. And now women are living vibrant lives, going back to college, traveling, doing lots of things. But there's also a lot of that pressure, and women can get really disconnected from themselves. We become all about the output and find it very hard to find time for ourselves. And I will deal with a lot of women, both in that exciting phase, but also just overwhelmed.
So how do we know? Like, how did you know? How does a person know when they're actually just surviving.
Yeah.
How?
And that's a brilliant, brilliant question, because we can spend a huge period of time in default emergency survival mode and not really understanding that that's where you're in. I certainly did. You're just putting one foot in front of the other. And often it'll be something that maybe shakes you out of it. Or it could be, you know, I've just been speaking at the National Menopause Summit and, you know, something will change dramatically in yourself and you just know things need to change. And you had that sort of aha moment, I think, as well.
Yeah.
There'll be lots of ways that it can happen where you just kind of feel either I need something to change or I am just under, even though I'm overwhelmed, I'm underwhelmed by what I'm getting back in this life for the amount I'm putting in. Or the sort of realization that, you know, life is passing you by, or maybe something like your kids leave home, and you realize, gosh, I haven't filled in a lot of the external around me. I've just been sort of outputting and not feeding inputting. And it is that sense often of I do a little model where I talk about that overwhelm period where you're not able to respond, you're only reacting, you're in survival mode. You know that if you stop, the house of cards is going to fall. That's a clear sign that, and we'll probably get into this, that you can't, with reason and being reasonable and responsible, to say, I need to go and exercise today. I need to be able to do something for myself, that there's this pressure on you saying I can't, or I should be doing X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
And that the noise, and what can happen in overwhelm is that the noise around us is so intense, telling women who we should be, how we should be. And you will know, because you're not living vibrantly. You yeah. are surviving. You'll know you're surviving because you can't take your foot off the pedal. And it's not like you're going to spend, you know, it's not realistic for someone like me. I'm 54, I single parents, three teenage girls. It's not realistic for me to be spending 6 months of the year sipping cocktails in Bali. I understand that my life, much as I would like to, I understand that my life is busy, that there's a certain energy and pace to it. I get that. But I also need to understand that if I want to be a decent mother, a decent partner, a decent daughter, my dad is sick at the moment, all of those things, I have got to prioritize my strength. I've got to strengthen myself up so I can be all those things. But I've got to do it from a place of strength, not drain.
There's a real awakening in that, isn't there? There's yeah. a real awareness that you have to confront. I know so many women that are so afraid to just sit still for 10 minutes.
Oh,
and I think it's because of what you're mentioning, that there'll be this realization that all is not well and that it is just constantly output and not enough input.
I think there's also fear, and I think that's valid. And a lot of the work that I do with women is to help them just sit in that really just uncomfortable space of going, all right, just stop a minute and let all the dust settle and see what, nope, can't do that. Don't want to listen to those noises and voices. No, I'll just keep going with my hair on fire, because if I stop, I don't know what thoughts are going to come up. Who wants to listen to the thoughts of a perimenopausal woman? And often when someone comes to me and they want something to change, they want maybe a marriage or maybe career, or they're just overwhelmed. And I'll say, okay, but here's what I need you to understand. And can you agree to this? And it's, I'm sure, very similar to you. Someone doesn't come to you and go, oh, right, I'm going to go from this body shape to this body shape in a week. I'm going to have to put the work in. So I will say to them, take the pressure off of having to have the answer by Tuesday at 5 o'clock. Okay. Understand that you might have to go through this process now of awakening, of stretching, of looking up and out the door and going, what is it? Who am I now at this age and stage, whatever that is, whether you're 42 or 56 or whatever, and do it regularly. Who am I now at this age and stage? How do I update the software, that checklist that I might have set off in my 20s, and I might have ticked some of those boxes, some worked, some didn't, some didn't give me what I thought they were going to give me. Or I've just had so much experience now. I've loved and learned and loved and lost and I want and laughed and I have different priorities now. And it's just that check-in of going, who am I? How am I? Where am I now at this age and stage? And what is it that I need? And that's a process. If you had the answer, you wouldn't be sitting here, or you wouldn't be feeling the way you're feeling. And it's it is investing time on yourself and shining the light that we so often shine on other people, on ourselves a little bit, and saying, this takes time. I need to build mental muscle as well as physical muscle. We need to understand that we're not always responsible for the first thought in our head. And that's a massive one, because of that outdated conditioning that we have to be all things to all people. Often the first thought in your head is, oh, I should be doing this for somebody else. Oh, I can't take the time for myself. Or, oh my goodness, I don't, you know, I'm not the kind of person who, or I just, I'm busy, 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 busy. And that's who I am. And I don't know who I am if I don't carry that busy mantle. So, you know, people might think I'm lazy, or I might have notions, or so I'll just keep that, even though it's killing me.
Yeah.
If not physically, emotionally. And just take the time to process and get to know yourself again. Who am I at this age and stage? What is it I really need and want? And how do I become her? And what are the steps that might take?
Oh, how do I become her? I love that. We do that with our fitness programs. It's about creating your avatar and focusing on the actions of who you want to become, as opposed to just focusing on the immediate results. Just while we're on this, I want to talk to you about something. You put up a brilliant Instagram post that I want to ask you about, and you can follow Alana. Her handle is at midlife coach. And it was about the triad of
turmoil.
Yeah, it was so cool. Perfectionism, people pleasing, and imposter syndrome, and you're doing too much. And one of the things you mentioned that I want to ask you about as well is we're disempowering those around us. Could you tell us about that? That was such a great post.
Right, saddle back. Everybody, get yourself a cup of tea, because this is going to be... Yeah, because to put it in very simple terms, often I say to women, you've got to understand the context of your life, that you think that you're doing everything according to Instagram and Facebook, right? But actually, you're living in a system that you haven't maybe understood where you're at. Now, we are in this amazing redefining period of time, redefining midlife for women. It's the most exciting time in history for women. And it's really hard. They're not mutually exclusive. So we're kind of moving away as a society from that patriarchy, which is, you know, where women were there to sort of serve and support. But we haven't reached equity yet. So we're straddling two worlds of, we've got all these amazing opportunities and potential, and we're trying to have careers, and we've got the potential to do so much. And we're still living under a lot of the social narrative that women have to be all things to all people. We were brought up to be a good girl. You know, when my brother was going out on a Saturday night, he was told, have fun, be good. Or sorry, he was told, have fun, have a good time. When I went out on a Saturday night, I was told, be good, stay safe. Those little messages that still ingrain women that you have to be, you know, something. And so I talk about the triad of turmoil that is often that first thought. It's people pleasing. We have to please everybody. That's our role. We have to be a good girl.
Yeah.
Or that imposter syndrome, because there just is not the history of women. You know, when I was growing up, I'm 54, you know, there weren't women in politics and academia and art and all those things, lest our hysterical tendencies broke the controls. And so we don't have that legacy. So that's where the imposter syndrome, it's not that we're not good. It's not that we don't have it. It's just, we don't have the legacy of history. We don't have an encyclopedia of her story of women all through history doing amazing things. They probably were, or they weren't allowed, but there's no history. There's no her story.
Yeah.
So that imposter syndrome is not ours to own. It is something it's a noise out there. And the third one was perfectionism. And, you know, I went into recovery a few years ago, not for the gin, but for that perfectionism, because it was nearly killing me, because you have to be all things to all people and you have to do everything great. And I go into it in my book about, you know, research was done about 20 years ago that women, because of the increase in feminism, we're moving on this patriarchy, were caught in a double bind. So we had to be all good at all the female things, nurturing, kind, loving, the mother figure, all of that stuff. And now we also had to be good at all the male things, you know, ballsy, leader, which is in direct conflict sometimes with that.
Yeah.
And when the research was revisited 10 years ago, they discovered not only had it not got better, it had got worse. And now women were caught in a triple bind. Good at all the female things, good at all the male things. And now you have to do it while looking absolutely fabulous, according to Instagram. And the pressure is unbelievable. And so when I talk about don't believe the first thought in your head, it is imposter syndrome. It is perfectionism. It is that people pleasing. And the voice that will say, you can't get up and invest time in yourself to exercise or eat healthy food or go back to college or think about whether this marriage is serving you or not, or could you redefine it? Or is there equity in this household in terms of the workload? Put that thought aside and think about what is the real thought for myself. And this idea of becoming, you know, when we set that checklist off, we kind of think we're going to arrive. And I think there's a much better energy, and especially women at midlife, if we can understand this, you asked about the awakening, is stop trying to arrive and keep trying to become. And becoming means there's no ideal weight, there's no ideal place where everyone will get you. You're just constantly evolving and becoming, and your life experiences will change you. You can learn, you can explore. There's a sense of agency and action in the term becoming, as opposed to this sort of, if I just check the boxes, if I just look like this and do this and get my kids looking all right, then I'll arrive. That's a very, you know, it's quite a crushing energy, I think.
I love that so much. There's a real, what comes to my mind is a real sense of letting go.
Oh.
Which is
letting
wonderful.
Go and becoming who you're supposed to be, and also understanding you're becoming at different times in your life. So, you know, I'm sure a lot of the work that you do talks about so I'm, say, 54. I understand that I need to, that a lot of the exercise, for example, I do at my age is different from in my 30s. I need to do a lot more weight bearing now, all of that. I've never become 54. So how do I become 54? It's about investing time and energy. I'm trying to become the parent of an adult now. I've never done that before. That's exciting. I'm going to become a parent of somebody. I'm going to become someone in the next few years where my kids are starting to leave home. And my dad, unfortunately, is quite ill, so he may not be around. So within the next 3, 4, 5 years, I'm going to become a whole new woman. Who do I want to be? What kind of life do I want to be living? And how do I become her now? How do I invest in myself now whilst also living this life? So that, you know, when I am 57, 58, my kids have left home, that I'm running retreats in Bali and doing the yoga and have the energy and the lifestyle that I want. And it's so easy for women. I've been there. I've been that soldier of head barrel down in survival mode, putting one foot in front of the other. And if I can say one thing to you, it is try to lift your head a little bit and see that you will not always A, be in this state, but B, and I know it feels like another thing on your to-do list, you've got to become who you are now and who you want to be. Don't let that triad of turmoil. It doesn't, those voices don't belong to you. They belong to an outdated system. You have every right to thrive as an individual before your roles and responsibility. I liken it to, I have this Russian doll set here, and the dolls within dolls within dolls. And, you know, we all start off as this core, beautiful, innate person with all your quirks and things. And I have three daughters. They're all so different. And then we'll very quickly take on an outer doll of the family and the culture and the time that we grew up in. So I was born in 1970 Belfast. I would have taken on a lot of the messaging, the cultural narrative around my own family's values. And then you might take on another one in terms of your career or study. Then you might take one on as a partner. Then you might take one on as a parent, until it's that outer doll you're presenting to the world. And I talk about aging powerfully. So forget about aging gracefully. We have to age powerfully and redefine this midlife. And aging powerfully means that you don't let those roles smother the core. The core influences those roles, but you're becoming yourself. You're not being smothered by all of these roles and responsibilities.
I love that so much. It's such a positive analogy. So positive and so empowering.
Yeah. And she's in there. She's always in there. And doesn't mean she's not part of these roles. But it is more about being, I remember very clearly when I had my first child, and I'd had a very dynamic sort of 20s, 30s. I was working for UNICEF. I was traveling all over the world. I had a real sense of, you know, the energy in that time in my life was sort of chasing all those tick boxes and stuff. And, you know, when I became a mother, I was like, oh my God, I don't know how to do this. And I remember literally getting a Bowdoin catalogue for my mother-in-law and going, oh, is that what a mother looks like? And I ordered loads of clothes because I thought if I wear the clothes, if I wear the cover, I'll know what to do. And you know, whether you're a mother or you're working in a workplace or, you know, women are constantly told how to be and look and behave. And so we can react to all of those external demands and pressures rather than respond to our own becoming. And that's okay. No one, life is busy, but hopefully at some point in midlife, be it in your 40s, 50s, or 60s, it's never too late. And I think you should do it regularly. Just check back in and go, who am I? Who am I becoming? Who have I become in all of the experiences that I have? But also, who am I still becoming? You're never stuck. You're never this one person. If you've never, I meet women who'll go, I can never lose weight. I said, what? Never, never. You've never lost weight ever. Oh, no, I did. Well, I lost weight twice. I said, okay, and tell me what you did those 2 times. Oh, well, my son and daughter were getting married. I said, right. So you can't lose weight unless both of your children get divorced, find somebody quickly, and remarry. That is the only way you're going to lose weight. And she's like, well, no. I said, well, why don't we? So have you tried to lose weight other times? Oh, yeah, like 150 times. And I said, and what were the actions you took to lose weight those 2 times versus the 150 times? Funnily enough, they've tried the same thing 150 times and doesn't work, and never gone back and replicated what they did for the 2 times. So I will often look at motivation. Some people are motivated by money. So if you pay the gym, you'll go to the gym. Other people are not. You can pay 1,000 gyms and you'll never go. Some people are motivated by accountability. So if I join something with somebody and or I get a personal trainer, I will show up once I've said I will. Other people aren't. They'll let people down all the time. That's not a thing. Other people are motivated by, you know, working towards something. So what we managed to establish in that case was, well, what were the two situations, those situations? Well, I had a very clear time. I had a very clear vision of who I wanted to look like and become. I wanted to be the mother of the bride, and I wanted to look like this, and I wanted to wear that outfit. And I had 9 months. I said, okay, so all you need is a goal destination, a thing to work towards. And let's replicate what you did. What, did you like go on some crash diet and have a horrible time? She said, no, I actually really enjoyed it. I just did more walks with friends. I did XYZ, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, let's replicate that so your children don't have to actually leave happy marriages. And one of the things we did was, so again, but her belief was, I can't lose weight.
Yeah, and do you
That
know
was
what
the
I love so
voice.
much about that? I love so much about the fact that your way of doing it, that they're not feeling like a failure anymore
No,
because
they're not a failure.
you're just helping them find how they get motivated themselves.
And so I said to her, so twice it succeeded when you had a very clear goal, you had a destination, you wanted to look a certain way and be a certain way. Tell me what's motivating you when you join the gym, these other 550. Well, I think I should. I should join the gym. I should get fit. I should do X. Okay. And I said, okay. And, you know, how many times have you joined the gym and not gone? Oh, 1,000 times. So why are you repeating the failed motive? What the method?
Oh my
So
gosh.
jigs in the reels. What I said to her, and this is a very smart woman, very senior job, you know, early 60s. Anyway, I said, give me, and we played around, we came up with some stuff. I said, because obviously we're not going to have another wedding. I said, well, give me something that you've always wanted to do. And one of the things she wanted to do was climb Croagh Patrick, which is a mountain here. And I said, okay. And we were worked through lots of different things that had worked for those 2 periods of time. And one was accountability. I said, she's always wanted to climb Croagh Patrick with my family. I said, okay, how would you, this was in January, how would you feel if you were to ring your both child, adult children tonight who happen to live in London and say to them, on this date in September, would you come home, book flights now, fly home, and we're, as a family, going to climb up Croagh Patrick? How do you feel? She said, I can do that. And I said, let's expand this weekend now. So there was a particular dress she wanted to wear. There's a lovely restaurant nearby. And she says, I've always wanted to go there. And I said, what do you want to wear? And she says, well, there's this beautiful red dress that I wore in Paris years ago, but I've never been able to get back into it. I said, so can we formulate this weekend in 9 months' time? Your children are coming home from the UK. You've got to get fit enough to climb Croagh Patrick and wear this red dress in this restaurant. Yes? Yes. Went home that night, rang her children. They booked the flights. We're all game on. Now, let's work backwards. What do you need to do to get there? And it was a joy. She said, well, I need to go up from walking, you know, 3K a week to X. How are you going to do that? I'm going to get a friend on a Wednesday. She was working towards something. She's very visual. And again, I'll work with someone in terms of their goals, whether that's a career, relationship, whatever else. I said, get a picture of Croke Park, print it out, edit a picture of you in the red dress from years ago, sitting on top of Croke Park. You're not going to be wearing the dress when you're climbing Croke Park. You are going, but it's associating the dress with the weekend. On her fridge, every day, she could see what she was working towards. Wearing the red dress that weekend with her family, climbing up Kirkpatrick. And she did it. And she did it in a place of joy. And she created the habits of eating healthily, walking more, she accountability. She went to the gym because she had a goal and she understood it was investing in herself in a really positive way. And understanding what worked for me before, how can I replicate it working forward? All of that is about aging powerfully. It's about investing in self. It's getting out of overwhelm in this total reaction mode of react, 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 and going, I'm going to be able to respond to some of my own needs and desires. And it's literally, it's not, you don't need a week in Greece in a retreat. You just need to switch on the light that you shine on others, just slightly turn it around on yourself.
Oh, I love that so much. I want to ask you about your coaching program in a few moments, but before I do, I want to ask you, if somebody is listening in right now and they are really feeling desperate, that they're at rock bottom and they're not sure what steps to take, what recommendations would you give for them to just initially get out of the hole they're in?
So the first thing I would say to you, if you're listening to this and you're feeling that you're at rock bottom, is well done. In the sense that the fact that you know you're at rock bottom, the fact that you've created that bit of awareness, that is step one. You're ready on your way, okay? You're ready on your way. It's the people who don't lift their head. It's the people who just blindly run through. So if you're even at the stage where you go, I don't know how to keep going, you've made a massive decision. Now it's about saying, I matter more in my own midlife. If you can even say those words, I matter more in my own midlife. I'm not taking away the laundry. I'm not taking away the thousands of jobs you still have to do. It's putting you into the mix in whatever way and shape that's going to start looking. Look, I'm a big fan of things like journaling. I'm a big fan of things of just connecting to self, starting to have, even if you understand that the first thought in your head isn't yours, and start having a relationship with yourself. I sometimes hear stuff in my head going, really? Really? That really we're going there? That's really, it's not that I don't have those thoughts anymore. I completely still hear them all of the time. I just know now they're not mostly mine. And there's lots of, it's that first moment of going, I matter. I was on a podcast this week with Sheila Shoiga, and I actually revealed a very personal secret, but actually so many women contacted me afterwards. So I thought, okay, I'm going to admit it now. You know, I used to be like many women, that perfectionism, that imposter syndrome, people pleasing piece. I was very critical of myself. I'm not good enough. I'm not doing enough. I'm too loud. I'm too quiet. I'm not, everything was, you know.
Yeah.
And I've reached the stage, because I invest in myself, apologies for the dog. I wake up every morning, and the first thing I do before I even open my eyes is I go like this. I rub my arms and I go, good morning, my love. And I say that the most important conversation you have every day is the ones you have first thing in the morning and last thing at night with yourself. Doesn't matter if you're lying in bed with the love of your life, or you've got three gorgeous kids who are loving you, wait till they're teenagers, and they're giving you hugs. You still need to do that for yourself. So to that woman who's feeling so lost and so overwhelmed, I'm going to say something harsh, but it's true. No one's coming to save you. You're going to have to save yourself. I remember when my marriage ended and I'm sitting here with three small children, my mama just died. I did not know some days how I was going to get up and keep going. And no matter how many nights I sat here drinking gin and tonic, Keanu Reeves did not come to save me. I had to figure out how to save myself. And that feels hard because you're already saving everybody else in your life. But when you understand no one else is coming, there's a sense of, okay. And the smallest step, you don't have to just leave. The number of women I work with sometimes, and they think they want to leave their marriage or leave their job, or they're resentful of their kids. And they're, when we do the work to get them out of overwhelm, when we get them to see that they matter, when they start investing in themselves, when they start realizing they're still becoming, they're not stuck in this state. It was never the people, it was the pressure. And That gives you a sense then of saying, I have as much right to thrive as everyone else in this family. I want my children to thrive. I want them to invest in themselves. I want my partner. I have equal right, equal right. And when the first thought in your head says, no, you don't, you're a woman, you're meant to be responsible for everybody else's happiness, you go, oh yeah, not my fault. I have equal right to thrive in this relationship, in this office, in this community, in this family.
Oh, I love that so much. I love that so much. It's funny with the thoughts, isn't it? Even just yesterday, I was walking by a mirror and I said something really nasty to myself. And I was walking away and then I said out loud, no, Jessica, we don't do that anymore. And I walked back and I said something nice to the mirror. It felt great.
Brilliant.
Doing that.
That's a relationship with yourself, 100%. It's not that you don't get, so I say, I was talking with the National Menopause Summit a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, the imposter syndrome came over me in the morning. You know, I'm going to be sharing a stage with people with more PhDs and qualifications and loads of doctors and loads of research scientists and me. And, you know, I had to go, yeah, they have PhDs and doctorates in XYZ and you have this message. You know, I'm here. And it's not that the thoughts don't come. So please, when you get the thoughts saying, oh God, I don't have time to go to the gym because, or I can't invest in myself, or I can't, just go, not your thought. Choose a different one.
Oh, I love that.
Choose a different thought. Choose one that even gets you to the next. So I often talk about, you know that image we have of the human going from Neanderthal and they're all crouched up and then slightly bigger and slightly bigger until we become a human, and it's like five stages.
Yeah.
So that's overwhelm, right? So the difference between aging, you know, powerfully, and that is that overwhelm is that crouched figure. Completely, you're like this, you're covering your head, you can't see out, you're just reacting, you're just reacting. And that's when you're saying, I am overwhelmed. Even if you were to go lift your head ever so slightly, hands off, by saying, I'm overwhelmed right now. That suddenly puts it in context, because there might be a time that allows the possibility of I might not be overwhelmed another time. I am overwhelmed right now. You can lift a bit further, next stage up, to be the really, really good one was, I am feeling overwhelmed right now. Because now I'm separate from, I am not overwhelmed, I am feeling overwhelmed. Massive difference. Then you go to the next stage, slightly further up. I am feeling overwhelmed right now because, magic word, because. And then you get to be, well, because I am right now juggling this. And like right now in my life, I have got the three girls. One's about doing her leaving cert. One's at 16. So I'm just my eyes everywhere managing her, her emotional health. My dad is in the middle of radiotherapy. I'm trying to run a business. I am overwhelmed right now because I'm trying to juggle quite a lot of stuff. Oh, well, that makes sense then. Okay, that's not me not coping. That's not me being a failure. That's not me being whatever. Oh, I am overwhelmed right now because, or I'm feeling overwhelmed right now because, oh, right, now there's reasons for it and I can actively, proactively engage in supporting myself through it. And I think that's the big difference. I say this, anyone who's here heard me before will be bored me, but I say it to myself every day. I say it to most of my clients. And I'll say it, I'll put it on my gravestone. Not that I want a gravestone, but when life feels hard, it's usually because it is hard. Now ask yourself, what do I need to support myself through it? And what happens is we get that overwhelm, we wash it and go, oh, this is just life and I have to just manage it. No, when life feels hard, it's usually because it is hard. Now ask yourself why and what is it you need to support yourself through it. You might not be able to take away all of the issues. I can't take away my dad's treatment or the fact that my daughter's doing her leaving cert or the fact that I have 1,000 things going on. What I can do is acknowledge that, oh, this is a really difficult, stressful period of life right now. Now, what do I need to support myself through it?
I love
I
that.
Need to invest sleep. I need to get some exercise. I need to say to my girls sometimes, can you clear up the dinner there? Because I'm going to go for a quick walk after dinner. I just need to clear my head. I need to take agency and ownership of myself. And it's the difference between crouching down, I am overwhelmed, to standing up and going, oh, I'm feeling overwhelmed right now because X, Y, and Z. That makes sense. Now, what do I need to do to get myself through this?
Thanks for sharing that, Alana. That's so helpful. I want to ask you, your coaching program sounds really exciting. Somebody's listening now and they want to work with you. Could you share a little bit about your coaching program?
So my main one is sort of usually about 12 sessions, and that's only so that we can have a beginning, a middle and an end for people who, you know, want to see a structure to it. Many of my clients stay on in what I call maintenance. So once a month, we'll come back and just go, oh yeah, remind me of all my mantras and stuff. And I have a very clear pathway. So regardless of whether someone's coming to me because they're overwhelmed, or maybe they're at a crossroads, or maybe they're ghosting themselves, you know, they're not answering their own calls. Or maybe
I saw that on your Instagram. I loved that. We didn't get around to talking about that.
We ghost ourselves all of the time. Ghost ourselves all of the time. I'm not answering my call. And listen, someday you might, if you're not answering your own call, someday you're going to show up at your front door as a monster, because, you know, that person needs to be heard. And, you know, when I feel unseen and unheard in my family home, because funnily enough, I'm with three teenagers who aren't seeing or hearing me because they're doing their own thing, I need to understand I'm not seeing and hearing myself. And when you're feeling overwhelmed and not feeling seen and unheard, first and foremost, you're not hearing and seeing yourself. And that's the ghosting piece. Or maybe you're at an exciting new stage. Maybe your parents, kids have left home, or maybe you've come out of a marriage, or maybe you're in a new career stage and you're excited, but you're not quite sure how to navigate. Those tend to be the four sort of areas. But whatever those are, there's a sort of process. And the first part is self-discovery. You've got to know yourself. You've got to update the software. Who am I now at this age and stage? How am I? Where am I? Where is the checklist? Has it bloody exploded, or has I checked them? And actually, here I am now with this extended midlife, and I've checked all those boxes, and ooh, this is exciting. Let's figure out some new boxes, or maybe whatever. So the first few sessions are all about really connecting to that sense of self. And I cannot tell you how transformative it is, how empowering it is for women to find that inner core again, to go, oh, hello. Look at you. You're here. You're peeling back a lot of those layers of the Russian doll set. You're not getting rid of them. They're not bad, but you're revealing this again. And you're going, ah, from this place of self-knowledge, then the middle piece is, you know, what do I want next? How do I want my life to feel? So in my book, I talk about in that early stage of life, we'll say things like, what do I want my life to look like? And hopefully at midlife, you'll ask a better question. What do I want my life to feel like? And then that's the part of the process where we'll really get into the nitty-gritty of redefining success for your relationships, your career, what you want your life, you know, your health, fitness, all that kind of stuff, whatever is the thing. And then the final part is, you know, backing yourself, understanding what are your self-limiting beliefs, what's holding you back, looking at those motivational things. What does it look like to get from here to here? How are you going to become the person you've just designed in the middle part? And it's a process. But I say this, and I will say this, you know, hopefully I'm good at what I do, and I have huge faith in the program, because so many women have just come away. I haven't solved all of their problems, but I've given them the sense of agency to deal with them. But I still say that actually 70% of the impact is the showing up for yourself. It's the taking the hour every week to say, this is my space. This is my time. This is a neutral space. You're not my partner, my parent, my friend. I'm not worried about what I'm going to say. I can be open and honest. That is 70%, is the turning the light on yourself to go, oh, who am I now? Oh yeah. How did that impact me? What do I really want? Who am I really now? You know, Cheryl Strayed talks about in the early part of life, you ask the question, who am I? Who am I? You're getting into life going, who am I? And at midlife, you ask a much better question. Who am I really? And that process, because women are so often over 40, are just so busy, 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 looking after everybody else, responsible for everyone's happiness, output, 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 maybe looking after parents, trying to figure, you know, trying to, you know, our big arse is in or out. This, you know, I've spent 30 years doing fitness to get a small bum, and now big bums are in. I mean, oh my God, it's exhausting, you know? And so it is a really just gorgeous space for you to go, oh, I matter. Who am I? Where am I? How am I? And what do I want to do next? And how am I thriving and becoming? How do I get off emergency mode and get into thrival mode?
Sounds
what
so exciting
like?
And so amazing to have a coach in your corner with you. I'm going to share how people can contact with you in the show notes. Could you also share how the best place for people to contact you?
Sure. So you can follow me on Instagram at Midlife Coach. I'm on my website is themidlifecoach.org. And there's lots of stuff. There's a free download, actually, if you go onto my Instagram and just download the Midlife Marker, and you never have to see me again. But even that space, that time, it's a little bit of exercises of the non-sweaty kind, where you just think about yourself. Where am I? How am I? You update some software. And even that alone might allow you to go, oh, do you know what? All those, the number of times I work with someone and they come to me and they're like, this is what I'm working towards. And then halfway through they go, I don't even want that. Like, I've wanted that for 20 years because that's what my parents told me I should want. Or that's because I thought, why? I don't even want that anymore. You know, and so it's just taking a beat, which is so hard for women in midlife, but take the beat, look at yourself in the mirror kindly and go, how are you? Yeah, you matter. Now, come on, let's keep becoming. Let's see who I can become.
I love that. Where's the easiest place for people to get your book, Midlife Redefined, Better, Bolder, Brighter, and The Sandwich Years?
So they're on Amazon, so they're in some bookshops, and or go onto my website and all the details.
Oh, terrific. On your website
and
as well.
The Midlife Redefined is a kind of, it's a self-guided book. It's my own story. It's some of the stories of my clients, but each chapter has a theme and an exercise at the end. So it's bespoke to you and you end up with your own bespoke midlife full manual.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Bit, you'll have done a lot of the work and a lot of the exercises, and you'll have a bit of a GPS. You'll have that goal of on the fridge of this is who I'm becoming and who I want to be.
Alana, thank you so, so much for coming on the show. You are one of the most empowering women I have met. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. And thank you for those exercises I did the other day in the kitchen.
You're very welcome.
My glutes are thriving as a result.
Terrific. Have a lovely day. Bye.
You too. Thanks, Jessica.